From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually to meet workforce demands and grow West Virginia's economy. Learn more at wvhepc.edu. The W. Page Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Marshall University, providing hands-on education in advertising, public relations, and journalism across all media platforms.
At the legislature today, the first pieces of legislation make their way through the House and Senate chambers. Senators consider a bill that would make changes to unemployment benefits for striking workers, while in the House, delegates discuss construction funding for the schools for the deaf and blind. And the finance chairs join us to discuss that growing budget gap. Those stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Senators have completed their work on six bills so far this session, sending them across the rotunda for consideration in the House of Delegates. They largely deal with rules from various state agencies and get rid of some programs that are no longer administered. In the House, delegates put their first bill of this session to a vote today, one of many ethics bills expected to move through the chamber this year.
House Bill 2006 increases the penalties for someone who violates West Virginia's whistleblower law. That law protects a public employee who alerts authorities of misdoings in a state agency. If a whistleblower's employer retaliates against the individual, state law currently allows a judge to suspend the employer and impose a fine of up to $500. The newly passed House bill, however, strengthens those penalties and makes it possible to terminate the employer and also pay a fine of as much as $5,000. Delegate John Schott of Mercer County is the judiciary chair.
It also makes it clear that this is a personal fine against the person. That up to $5,000 fine is a personal obligation of that person and not of the entity, the governmental entity that employs that person.
The bill also puts the control for making the decision regarding termination in the hands of the public agency instead of a judge. House Bill 2006 passed 98-0.
Aside from his budget proposal, Governor Jim Justice also placed a major emphasis on education during his State of the State address. He wants to change the state's standardized testing requirements, give teachers a 2% pay raise, and push more control down to the local level. Lawmakers in the House's Education Committee have already gotten to work on their own proposals. Liz McCormick joins us now with more.
During both the 2015 and 2016 state legislative sessions, the House pushed a bill that would make the West Virginia Schools for the Deaf and Blind eligible for funding from the West Virginia School Building Authority, or the SBA. In 2015, it was vetoed by then-Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, and in 2016, it never made it out of the Senate's Finance Committee. Now, members in the House are trying once again with House Bill 2123.
The schools for the deaf and blind are located in West Virginia's eastern panhandle in the small town of Romney. They serve pre-K to 12th graders from all over the state, but over the years, the campus and its buildings have fallen into disrepair. As state-owned schools, they don't have the ability to raise their own funds through bonds or levies like a county school system to help pay for construction, repairs, or building upgrades. They also aren't eligible for funding from the SBA, a government agency that awards additional state dollars to counties to help pay for capital improvement projects. House Bill 2123 is the House of Delegates' third attempt to change that eligibility. Delegate Paul Espinosa of Jefferson County is the House Education Chairman. His committee took up the bill today.
One of the things that's become very apparent as members have actually toured the facilities at the schools for the deaf and blind is that there are significant capital needs that are necessary in order to bring those facilities up to a level that is conducive to a positive educational environment.
Administrators at the Schools for the Deaf and Blind estimate they need $1.5 million to update their current facilities through new construction or repairs. Over the past two sessions, lawmakers have been reluctant to just appropriate those funds straight out. But making them accessible through the existing SBA funding, Espinosa says, could be a good option.
This just kind of addresses that gap that has been created over time, where the schools have not perhaps received the funding that's necessary in order to address their capital needs, and would make them eligible to participate under the School Building Authority program.
The House Education Committee voted to advance the bill today. It now goes to House Finance for further consideration. Members of the House Education Committee also heard from representatives of the West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission Wednesday. The HEPC serves as an oversight authority of state colleges and universities. But over the past few years, lawmakers have discussed dissolving the agency altogether to save money. Chair Espinosa happens to also sit on the House Finance Committee, where he heard the same budget hearing. He says it's important as he and other lawmakers continue through the session to look at the most effective ways to use the state's limited resources.
You know, we're certainly looking very closely at the HEPC and the CCTC. I think it's clear that they do provide valuable services for particularly the smaller institutions, but even we heard testimony, I know, in House Finance that even some of the larger institutions do rely on some of those services. So again, I think that's something for members to really fully assess as we become more familiar with exactly, you know, what their budget entails. You know, I think those are decisions that we've made in coming weeks.
Any changes to the agency or its funding will likely be decided in the House's Finance Committee.
The state's Higher Education Policy Commission received about $68 million in state appropriations this fiscal year, but only $2.4 million of that is actually used to run the agency. Most of the money is funneled to students for grants and scholarships, including $18.5 million awarded through the Promise Scholarship.
Senators are considering a bill that would change the eligibility for unemployment benefits for workers on strike. It's a measure the bill's lead sponsor says other states have adopted, but West Virginia union leaders already oppose.
Senate Bill 222 was approved by the Senate Workforce Committee this morning and will soon make its way to the chamber's Finance Committee for a second look. The bill would make workers who have temporarily lost their jobs due to a strike ineligible for unemployment benefits from the state. Workers who go on strike and are permanently replaced at their jobs, or workers who are impacted by a lockout, can still receive those benefits. A lockout is when a company stops operating altogether while they negotiate their union contracts. Pat Maroney is general counsel for the West Virginia AFL-CIO.
This bill, as I see it, will do more harm to both the company and the employees.
Maroney says the bill creates an unequal playing field for union workers and employers during a contract negotiation period, giving businesses the upper hand. Going without pay will pressure unions to come to an agreement more quickly, and Maroney says businesses will no longer be negotiating in good faith, like federal and state law requires them to do.
The purpose of collective bargaining is so that the parties themselves can resolve disputes. In this instance, this will not be in favor of keeping a hands off of labor disputes. It will not do that. In fact, it will be an intrusion by the state into the collective bargaining process.
But the bill's lead sponsor, Republican Senator Ryan Weld, disagrees. He says the bill does nothing to impede collective bargaining.
It doesn't take someone's ability to doesn't take their ability away to join a union, to engage in the negotiation process when their contract comes up. It doesn't take away their right to fight for stronger benefits, for higher wages. It doesn't take away anyone's right to do any of that.
Weld says the bill is in the best interest of the taxpayers. Its attached fiscal note from Workforce West Virginia says upon implementation in 2018, the state will save about $175,000 in unemployment benefit costs. And Weld says in the state's current fiscal climate, every dollar counts.
The state shouldn't be in the business of subsidizing the costs of a labor dispute between a company and its employees. And this kind of just removes the state out of that equation.
Democratic senators on the Workforce Committee were quick to disagree. All four voted against advancing the bill. We continue our tour of the state's legislative districts tonight with three more members from the West Virginia Senate and House of Delegates.
Mike Maroney is a first-term senator from Marshall County. He's a Republican who represents the 2nd Senatorial District. Maroney is a graduate of Marshall University School of Medicine and owns his own radiology practice in Wheeling. This is his first time serving in public office. Michael Ferro represents the state's 4th House of Delegates District from Marshall County. He was first elected to the House in 2008. A Democrat, Delegate Ferro serves as the Assistant Minority Whip. Ferro is a retired teacher and coach. Joe Canestraro is a Democrat from Marshall County. This is his first term in the House of Delegates. He represents the state's 4th district. Canestraro spent 15 years serving as an assistant prosecutor in Marshall County before running for office. It's a position he will continue to hold during his time in the legislature.
We've focused this week on the challenge that lies ahead for lawmakers as they work to close a $497 million budget gap in the upcoming fiscal year. Joining us tonight are the two men leading the legislature to a solution. Delegate Eric Nelson chairs the House Finance Committee. He's from Kanawha County. And from Putnam County, Senator Mike Hall chairs the Senate Finance Committee. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here this evening.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start a little bit about the process, because we've talked about the budget since day one, but it's going to be a long time before we actually see a budget bill, right, Senator?
May not be as long as it was in the past, but yeah, it'll be a while. It'll be a few weeks.
Because you all, over the next couple of weeks, you'll work on your proposals individually, and then you'll present them to your chambers, and then are we still expecting to have the same kind of special budget session that we usually have, Delegate?
Special budget. I think that the goal really this year is to move everything up as much as we can. We both have special work groups, and so to put a little more attention on agencies early and not leave everything to the last couple of weeks.
Well, before we talk about those special work groups, let's talk about something that's kind of pressing that has to be fixed right away. And that's a $123 million gap in this year's budget, in 2017, that has to be fixed by July 1st. How do we plan to do that at this point? Are we looking to rainy day?
Well, I think that's what Governor Justice said in his State of the State address. Actually, even before now, in the past, the administration has come to us with their plans of where to pull money from. So, haven't heard those yet. Obviously, you reach into cash accounts or whatever, but I guess we're going to wait for the administration to take the lead on that, and I don't think we've heard anything yet, so we're waiting. I think the one comment was, he said, we're going to have to use $123 million in rainy debt. Didn't he? I think he said that in the State of the State.
So
that may be his option. We could, if requested, make suggestions as to other places perhaps to pull the money, but we'll just take his lead on it.
Delegate, do you see other places to pull those funds?
Well, I think just as we have seen in the last couple of years, looking at the other special revenue accounts, and I think it would be prudent of us to look at those and not maybe just all of a sudden go to the one easy spot of the rainy day fund, because we must be concerned about our rating, our debt rating out in the market, if we were to take $100 million plus day one.
So, Senator, let's talk about your plan for addressing this year's budget gap, because you're going to split your finance committee up into subcommittees to start looking into specific areas of the budget.
That's correct. Tomorrow we'll actually assign them, and we've picked basically four or five major areas. Actually, there are basically DHHR, military affairs, public safety, education, and then the rest of it, which would be lottery and those guys. So four or five groups, and then what I intend to do, and it's actually been done before, it's just nothing new, but what's new is the difficulty in this budget problem. I've been on these subcommittees before, on finance committees in the good times, so that it really wasn't that stressful or difficult. This time it'll be difficult, but I think it's important for more people, other than just I, the chairman, or a few of us to own the problem. And I think they already own the problem. Now they're going to see it in great detail. So I've already met with our caucus at least three times already in the first week, a budget committee caucus looking at the budget itself. And so we've begun a lot of work, and now we'll sign those subcommittees tomorrow. And I'm asking to report back as soon as possible, 3 or 4 weeks. They'll meet with the agencies, and I intend that whatever they do would be that piece of the budget that we'd put in with that section of the budget that we would use.
Delegate, what's your approach over in the House? How will your committee handle this budget?
So likewise, we have put together 14 subcommittees, so one for each agency. That our 25 members, or 24 other than myself, are split up between 2 and 5 members per agency. Just like Senator Hall mentioned, I think it gives everybody a little more ownership, and hopefully we can dig into their line items much sooner and have a much more complete project earlier during the session.
And what are we looking for from those agencies? Are we looking for places to cut?
Well, you know, I think one thing, it's how about efficiencies? As opposed to cuts, let's look at efficiencies. Are there areas for some consolidation? Asking reasons why they may have raised a particular line item. For instance, we had Commerce today. They have one line item in there this year, an increase of $105 million for, what is it called,
Save Our State program.
And we had a fair amount of discussion today, but even the secretary could not give us the total parameters of what those dollars would be spent on. So yes, we will look into what they're requesting that includes cuts.
So the governor, he mentioned the Save Our State program in his State of the State address and says that they'll be used in Commerce to attract more investment to West Virginia. But, Senator, do you think that's an easy place for you all to cut?
Well, you know, I would say, the newness of the governor and so forth, but when he went in and cut several programs and then added, he cut $36 million, public broadcasting was one of them, and then puts $105 million over in this line with no explanation. I've not seen anything like that before. And you have to really, the word I'm using is process that idea. You've got to come, the leader has to kind of go through the process of explaining, well, what's the return on investment? I know the new Commerce Director says that there are things we can do that, quote, and we hear this all the time, the return on investment argument. But the facts are that the Constitution gives us a parameter of doing the budget. And I've said the other day, and somebody said, well, that's a good explanation. Doing a household budget is different than what we have to do. We have to balance a budget with a number. Mm-hmm. And that's our responsibility in 60 days. And when you take $105 million away from the revenue, and suddenly, with all the other pressures on the budget, that's pretty difficult to reach that goal, particularly given the political situation that we're in. So it's possible, I'm going to tell them, and that he really wanted it for 1 year only. He does not project it for any more years. So that if the governor would choose and can find revenue somewhere else, one-time money, he's really asking for one-time money, but he's burdened the budget process with it. Mm-hmm. And so I would say to them, in a perfect world, if you've got cash here or there and you want to expire to Commerce for one time, you probably don't want to burden the general revenue budget with it. You want to do it that way if he wants to. So, those conversations have to be held because we've got to have a balanced budget. Both of us do, and we can only put out there in our documents what money we have to spend. And if there's no revenue, then we have to back up the spending of the document, basically. You want to call it a cut or whatever you want to call it, that's just what it is.
So a $497 million gap in 18, the governor is recommending $26.6 million in cuts. And Speaker Armstead says there's no more room for the sacred cows of state government. That was what he said. Education and the DHHR, the Department of Health and Human Resources, they have to take cuts. Delegate, is there room in those agencies for those cuts, in those areas of government, those cuts?
So our general revenue budget of roughly $4.5 billion, 80% of it is in those two line items. Education's half. And, so you have K through 12. And are there areas for cut? Yes, but we would have to change our long in place state aid school funding formula that takes legislation. On the higher education front, $500 million goes to that area. And obviously in the governor's proposed $450 million cut area.
His alternative plan.
Yeah, his alternative plan. It eliminated most all state funding for higher ed. And these two chairs the last 2 years have done everything we can to support that, because when we talk about economic growth, it's about the people that would be there for the companies that are either existing or that we want to come. They need to have the talent. And we can't lose sight of certain investments there. On the DHHR side, there are areas, but there are programs that touch so many, and we need to dig into those. And one area that we will look at this year, and we briefly addressed it last year, the state owns 4 nursing homes. Should we privatize that? We will have that debate this time, and I think move much further along, and the Secretary of DHHR is much in favor of that as well.
Yeah, there's not a millions and millions of there, but actually prior to my coming here, that was a meeting I had with him where we discussed that. I would say on the school aid formula issue, if the Speaker wants to proceed with that, that's a very complex change that deals with a whole history of legal decisions that deal with the fairness of it and so forth. But in order to get that done in 60 days, in order for us to have $200 million, let's say, from public ed, which would just be earth-shattering, you'll have to pass a bill. You better get it worked on now, because we cannot factor it into the budget as a savings or a cut without that. And so it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to actually provide the energy to do it. So the only education area you go is higher ed without a... And you've heard what Eric has said about that. I think we're in agreement on that. So that you could go there. And actually, in actual fact, the student population has gone down, and we've seen a decrease in the demand of that funding. But it's not in the multi-millions, but it's in, 8 or 10 million or something less. So there's actually been a natural cut there, but it's still part of the big... proposal the governor gave.
We've only got a couple minutes left, but I'm going to bring up another big issue, and that's the Senate President's plan to shift the state away from its reliance on income taxes and move it toward consumption taxes, like sales taxes.
Okay, on Friday, I'll tell you briefly the story. On Friday, the committee will consider a bill that will basically remove many of the exemptions that are in the law and raise the sales tax to 8%. Mm-hmm. And basically the numbers, if they prove out to be the case, you could eliminate the income tax. That's the proposal. I've been one who've been very, I've challenged that proposal to make sure that the revenue estimates are solid that come from that, or the fiscal note. And it's a conversation that even the governor himself said, but he wanted to look at. And down the road, that's all you could do. You would move from income tax to some sort of sales tax. And I would imagine my sense would be, and I've just said it tonight, what it is, that there will be a lot of questions about it. But it's going to be out there for the public's consideration. And obviously, if you don't have to pay any income tax, like several states don't, the theory is that would attract some people here, so that's what it's all about.
Delegate, just briefly, is this too risky of a change to take at this time when there's so much fiscal pressure on the state?
Some of the best times maybe to look at things are when your back is against the wall. Mm-hmm. And we are definitely up against that wall. But in personal income tax, $1.8 billion. Consumer sales tax, $1.3 billion. 7 states do not have the personal income tax, as Mike said. I think they've shown that their economic growth is much greater than many of the other states. That is a bold move. And I think both of us, through co-chairing the tax reform committee of the last 2.5 years, or last year and a half, have had a lot of meetings on this. Mm-hmm. And let's have some debate. But one area of concern that I will put out, 57 members of the House, their district borders another state. Mm-hmm. And the biggest concern that I would have, I think we both would have, would be border jumping because our consumer sales tax may be too high relative to another state.
Yeah, that's, I'm sure you're out of time, but that he's right about that. There's going to be a lot to overcome in terms of getting that through this year.
Senator Mike Hall, Delegate Eric Nelson, chairs of the House and Senate Finance Committees. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on our show, the House and Senate minority leaders join us to share their thoughts on the majority party's plans to close the 2018 budget gap. Delegate Tim Miley and Senator Roman Prezioso tomorrow on the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually to meet workforce demands and grow West Virginia's economy. Learn more at wvhepc.edu. The W. Page Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Marshall University, providing hands-on education in advertising, public relations, and journalism across all media platforms. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.